Wise men. Just it's a very small passage, only one paragraph. Just before Mahanama Sutta. Okay, so now that we have been again, we've been going through all the first aspects of the gradual training. Looking at the virtues and looking at how to overcome the defilements of the mind, the virtue of the mind as well. And so this is like a summary of what happens if you live this sort of life. What does that actually lead to? This is kind of the thing about this one here. What happens if you live a good life, basically? This is a very brief little passage. I'll just read it out for you. Again, when a wise man is on his chair or on his bed or resting on the ground, then the good actions that he did in the past, his good bodily, verbal and mental conduct, they cover him, they overspread him and envelop him. Just as the shadow of a great mountain peak in the evening covers, overspreads and envelops the earth, so too when a wise man is on his chair or on his bed or resting on the ground, and the good actions that he did in the past, his good bodily, verbal and mental conduct cover him, overspread him and envelop him. Then the wise man thinks, I have not done what is bad, I have not done what is cruel, I have not done what is wicked, I have done what is good, I have done what is wholesome, I have made myself a shelter from anguish. When I pass away, I shall go to the destination of those who have not done what is bad, etc., who have made themselves a shelter from anguish. He does not sorrow, grieve and lament. He does not weep his breast, beating his breast and become distraught. This is the third kind of pleasure and joy that the wise man feels here and now. So the idea here, you can see here, the idea is just that it is natural, if you have done all these good things, it's natural that when you just relax and you sit back, the happiness comes to you automatically. You don't have to do anything very hard, right? What I'm going to do next now is look at the Mahanama Sutta. And the Mahanama Sutta is about recollection, recollecting the goodness of your actions, about thinking about them. But the idea is that the recollection, you don't actually have to do all that much, right? It's almost an automatic process when you recollect your goodness. You sit back and you just wait to become peaceful. And then when you become peaceful, all these things just come back to you because you are saturated in these things. That's what it's saying, right? It kind of envelops you. You're saturated in these good actions. So this is why on the Buddhist path, you know, this is it's a good thing to do, to recollect your own good actions. If you do it in the right way, without kind of giving rise to a sense of pride or ego or whatever, but you do it in the right way, it's a positive thing. It's a spiritual faculty to be able to feel good about these things. So this is the power, and this is obviously why the more you kind of purify yourself, the more powerful that's going to be, the more automatic this process is going to be. And then that takes you off into deep meditation afterwards. So let's... So this is why this is kind of the pivot point between right effort and meditation. We're now kind of moving from the idea of right effort and we're moving towards the meditation side of things. So meditation side of things is really satipatthana practice, right? The watching the breath and these kind of things. And then leading from satipatthana over into the deep states of samadhi. This is the meditation aspect, the last part of the Noble Eightfold Path. So to be able to do that, as you saw at the very beginning, the crucial aspect in all of this is the happiness, right? Happiness is what makes meditation possible. Happiness is the glue that glues you on to the meditation object, that enables you to have mindfulness, to be present right here and now. So this is why this is so important, right? You feel the happiness, it kind of overspreads you, covers you, you feel good about all these things. So the Mahanama Sutta now is about how can we sort of help out to make that happiness arise on the path? Just briefly, the four right efforts, if you think about the four right efforts, those of you who have been around for a while, you will know how they work. And the four right efforts, the first one is the effort to eliminate bad states, bad qualities that have arisen in your mind already, right? To eliminate those, that's the first one of the right efforts. And that's what a lot of what we're doing so far is about. The second one is to the effort to avoid unwholesome states to arising in the future. And it's a similar kind of thing. When you reflect on these things, you do your metta meditation, and you reflect about the Dhamma, you're actually avoiding bad states from arising in the future. And then there is the active effort to develop the good states, right? You can see how we're moving along. Even in this case, there is a gradual sequence. So there's an active effort to develop good states. Of course, part of that is the metta practice, but also the part of that is what we're seeing now. And this is what then leads over into the meditation. When those good qualities become powerful, it leads into the meditation and enables meditation to happen. So let's see how this sutta goes and how this actually works out. So on one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Sakyans at Kapilavatu at the Banyan Tree Park. Then Mahanama the Sakyan approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and said to the Blessed One, "Bhante, how does a noble disciple who has arrived at the fruit and understood the teaching often dwell?" Mahanama, a noble disciple who has arrived at the fruit and understood the teaching, often dwells in this way. Here Mahanama, a noble disciple, recollects the Tathagata thus: "The Blessed One is an arahant, perfectly enlightened, accomplished in true knowledge and conduct, fortunate, knower of the world, unsurpassed trainer of persons to be tamed, teachers of gods or devas and humans, the awakened one, the Blessed One." When a noble disciple recollects the Tathagata, on that occasion his mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred and delusion. On that occasion his mind is simply straight, based on the Tathagata. A noble disciple whose mind is straight gains inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dhamma, gains joy connected with the Dhamma. When he is joyful, rapture arises. From one with a rapturous mind, the body becomes tranquil. When tranquil in body, feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, the mind becomes still, reaches samadhi. This is called a noble disciple who dwells in balance amid an unbalanced population, who dwells unafflicted amid an unafflicted population, and one who has entered the stream of the Dhamma, he develops recollection of the Buddha. So there you are, and you can see here, I'm sure you can recognize this last part here, this last part about joy, then rapture, right, tranquility, pleasure, and then samadhi, the meditation arising. This is exactly the same thing that we'll be talking about in the very first sutta of this retreat. Now we're coming back to that again. And now we're coming back to show how this sequence actually functions as a consequence of all the things that we have been doing so far on this path. So this is how this sequence comes into being here. So let's have a quick look at the things, what is actually happening here. So first of all, the first thing that I should probably need to point out is that Mahanama asked, how does a noble disciple who has arrived at the fruit and understood the teaching often dwell? So basically this teaching is about the person who is an Arya, who is a noble one, and who has actually had direct insight into the teachings of the Buddha. But it is not limited to that, and there are other places in the suttas where this also is applied to people who are not Aryas. The reason why it is applied to the Arya is because when you're an Arya and you have understood the teachings, this is a very simple thing to do, because you know what it means to be a Buddha. You understand it from direct experience. So it's a relatively easy thing to gain this kind of inspiration if you are an Arya. For other people, it's a bit more difficult, but it doesn't mean that it cannot be done, right? And this is what this is about. So then the Buddha explains, this is how you recollect the Buddha, right? The Tathagata. the Blessed One is an Arahant, etc. Again, this is the very beginning of the gradual training here. Remember that the Tathagata arises in the world, and these are exactly the same qualities that are mentioned there. So it's a standard passage of the qualities of the Buddha. So how do you relate to these qualities in a way that can give rise to a sense of, you know, wow, this is amazing, this is magnificent, and kind of bring you a sense of inspiration? How do you bring that inspiration about? Obviously, this is something that people might do differently. There's many different qualities about the Buddha that people might want to emphasize and think about. But basically, any way whereby you feel inspired about the Buddha, you feel, wow, you know, what a wonderful thing it is that even there are such people in the world, you know, who are there to kind of guide us or whatever. So whatever way you get that sense of inspiration is important. But just to point out a few things, and the first thing that I like to point out is to remember that the Buddha is a human being, right? He's basically one of us. He's a human being who discovered this awakening by himself 2,500 years ago. Because the Buddha is in such a different culture and is so far away in time, actually probably isn't that far, 2,500 years is pretty quick actually. But anyway, it can seem very foreign and very far away, and you wonder, who was this person? And because he's said to be awakened, you wonder, you know, is there any relationship between him and us? It's important to remember that the Buddha was a human being. Yeah? He was a human being just like us, and he had struggles just like we had on the path before awakening. Yeah? Obviously, he had some very special qualities in a certain way, but he was still a human, and essentially he was just like us. That is important to remember, because then you can start to relate to him, and you can start to relate to what it was about him that was special, and why it is worthy of he's worthy of such respect, and worthy of, you know, basically of being recollected in this particular way, so as to give rise to happiness and joy. So the thing about the Buddha which makes him different is not so much that he's not human; he's fully human. What makes him so worthy of this recollection is that he had this tremendous insight, understanding what the human condition is all about. And this is the thing: we all know that we want to be happy and we want to avoid suffering. It's very hard to find anyone who doesn't want that in one way or another. And the Buddha found the highest expression of that. What is the highest happiness and the complete elimination of suffering? So he found, and this is what is so powerful, it took me a long time to really understand that, but he found the answer to the meaning of life. Right? We look inside of us, everything we do in life is about craving, about moving towards happiness and contentment and completion and satisfaction in life. And here is somebody who actually found the answer to that. He found he resolved this kind of big thing inside of us that we're always trying to find, but we can't find it. So if somebody has found the solution to the biggest question in your life, isn't that kind of awe-inspiring and kind of great, right? And this is the thing about the Buddha, is a full understanding of happiness, full understanding of suffering, and also part of that is the knowledge of the path that actually goes to this place, goes to this place of the highest possible happiness. So this is about the Buddha. This is what we call the wisdom, right? It's wisdom because it is a direct understanding of the human condition and what we really want and what we are trying to achieve in life. So this is the wisdom aspect of the Buddha, right? This is basically what the Buddha is. And then there's the other aspect of the Buddha, which is the compassion aspect of the Buddha. Once you understand the human predicament, you understand the problems of human beings, and you know that you have the path, you have the solution to what everybody else wants, then compassion arises. This feeling, I have the solution, I can give it out to people. They're all suffering, they are in the dark. They are blind, they don't know how to get from A to B. But I know this. So compassion arises. And the Buddha is basically, as far as he is concerned, he doesn't really have to go on in this world anymore. He is done, he's finished. He has already found the highest, found what he was searching for in his search. And now he goes on. The Buddha's whole existence is about compassion, about teaching others this beautiful truth that he has found. So everything that motivates the Buddha comes from compassion, comes from the idea that he can help others. So this is what the Buddha is, basically. You can say that this is what, you know, that's really all, you know, from a mental point of view, that's what the Buddha is, wisdom and compassion combined. And this is one way of understanding the Buddha. And this is, this is one way that I like to reflect on these things. It sort of gives you some idea what is going on here. But remember that he's also human, right? If you saw the Buddha, you would see a human being. You would see someone who acts in the world in many ways just like us. Okay. So, and then it says that when a noble disciple recollects the Tathagata, the Buddha, on that occasion, his mind is not obsessed by the defilements. So you are subduing the defilements through this sense of confidence and faith in the Buddha. Already you have probably subdued the defilements a lot through your virtue, through your practice. And here you are actually subduing them even more through this type of recollection, because you are moving in towards a spiritual happiness, towards a spiritual realm of things, right? You're seeing happiness somewhere else. And because of that, the defilements of the mind that relate to this world and relate to the sensuality, they tend to disappear, because now you are feeding on something else beyond that. And for those of you, there was a couple of people who mentioned earlier on this idea that this gradual, what we call this, the sequence of dependent liberation, if you like, that we saw at the very beginning. Sometimes it starts with virtue, and then from the virtue you get the non-remorse and the happiness and the samadhi. But sometimes it starts with faith. And here you can see how faith is a component in this, right? Or confidence is a component in that. Just by that confidence in the Buddha that there is something so powerful, a teaching which is so powerful, a realization that is so amazing, this understanding of the purpose of life, so to speak, that in itself is enough to subdue the defilements of the mind, right? And this is what is happening here. So this is the faith aspect that we were looking at before. So the mind is not obsessed by lust, hate and delusion, or greed, hate and delusion. On that occasion his mind is simply straight based on the Tathagata. It's straight, you're not no longer crooked, right? The defilements make the mind crooked. You can't see clearly because your mind is distorted by desire and ill will. Desire and ill will distort your outlook on the world. You can't see what's going on. And you're always dwelling in the future or dwelling in the past, not really in the present moment, not able to see things as they actually are. And this is the problem with the defilements, that distort your outlook. And you know how that works, right? When you're angry, you think you should be doing things. It seems right to you at that time, and afterwards you regret it. When you have too much desire in the mind, the desire distorts you to think that what happiness lies somewhere where it doesn't lie, etc. So this is the mind that becomes straight. Suddenly you see things properly, right? You see things clearly. This is this straightness of the mind that happens as a consequence. And when you do that, the mind becomes straight in this way. You get inspiration. You get inspiration in the meaning. Wow, the Buddha, the meaning of that is the meaning of the highest possible happiness, right? The meaning of a complete elimination of suffering. This is what it means. It's the kind of the purpose. This word meaning here is atta. It means purpose. It means the goal of the practice. It means all of these other kind of things. So this is the inspiration in the meaning here. Of what the Dhamma and the Buddha is all about. Inspiration in the Dhamma. The Dhamma is the teaching, the doctrine. The teaching, when applied, leads to that goal, that purpose, that meaning of the path. And then with that inspiration, the word here, the Pali word, is Veda. And the Pali is related to the Vedas, which is under Brahmanical teachings, the teachings of Hinduism of the time. And the word Veda is this combination of a feeling and understanding. Understanding on the one hand and feeling on the other hand. So that's why it's translated here as inspiration, right? You're inspired. It's like a sense of understanding and a positive feeling arising at the same time. And from that inspiration comes the joy, right? And this is the pamudra that we're talking about before, at the beginning of the path, beginning of the dependent liberation, one thing leading to another one. Remember, this is an automatic sequence, right? Remember at the very beginning we were saying you don't need any will, you don't need any volition to do this. In fact, the volition gets in the way. This sequence is perfectly automatic. It just happens by itself. So once you just place your attention on the Buddha, what that means, the Tathagata, then this sequence comes as a consequence of that. So then you get the joy, you get the rapture comes from that, you get the tranquility, the pleasure, the happiness, and then the mind gets into samadhi because of that. This is called the noble disciple who dwells in balance amid an unbalanced population, who dwells unafflicted amid an afflicted population. Right? You are in balance, your mind is balanced, you see clearly, you're practicing the middle path, you're no longer veering to extremes anywhere. You're not afflicted. The greatest affliction in life is all these defilements in the mind. Once the defilements are removed, especially when you move towards samadhi, you feel a sense of liberation from all these problems in life, right? And you have entered the stream of Dhamma. Again, this refers to the noble ones, the Arya Pugalas. So this is one way of then developing this joy, which is so fundamental and important on the Buddhist path. So these are the kind of things that, and this is the thing, there's six different ways mentioned here. Some of these things might work for you, some of them will not work for you. Some of them will work sometimes, at other times they will not work. Yeah. So just keep these things at the back of your mind. People have different inclinations, and whatever works for you, that is probably where you should place your attention. And if it doesn't work at all, well, it means that probably you just have to keep on practicing, basically, and one day these things will start to work. Okay, so that is the Buddha. So let's go on to the Dhamma, the next one. Again, Mahanama, the noble disciple recollects the Dhamma. Recollects here, I think the Pali word is anusati, or is related to anusati. Anusati means to recollect, and it's related to the word sati, which is mindfulness, right? So these are all go together. So moving into the realm of meditation here. Thus, the Dhamma is well expounded by the Blessed One, directly visible, immediate, inviting one to come and see, applicable to be personally experienced by the wise. And then you have the same, the rest of the thing is basically the same. So this is the Dhamma, right? So this, what is this Dhamma? The Dhamma is the teachings of the Buddha. It comes from the Buddha. That's where it originates, right? So there is a natural sequence here. The Buddha comes first, and as a consequence of the Buddha, the Dhamma arises in the world. As a consequence of the Dhamma, the Noble Sangha arises. The Noble Sangha is a consequence. So there's a sequence here. There's always a sequence in these things. So this is the second thing here. So what is it about this Dhamma? What it is about this Dhamma is that it is a path that gives results, right? It gives rise to happiness. It is a path that you start straight away and you start feeling that this actually works for you. There's something very powerful about these teachings. It finally gives a sense of fulfillment that we have been looking for all our lives. You apply these teachings, which is good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end, always driving you towards something positive, always moving towards something more fulfilling, something better in life. This is the beautiful thing about these teachings. And it is immediately visible, it says here, directly visible. It means that the effects come straight away. As soon as you start applying this, if you apply it wisely and in a correct way, it has immediate effect in your life. So there's something very beautiful about these teachings. They are given by someone who understood the nature of reality, and part of that understanding is understanding the path that leads to these things. And then you apply that path, which comes from someone who has this powerful understanding. So that is this Dhamma, teaching, which when applied gives rise to these amazing results. It says here, to be personally experienced by the wise. You've got to be wise, right? So make sure that you are as wise as you possibly can. So this is interesting. It means that you are kind of we all have that potential wisdom inside of us. Wisdom is not the same thing as intelligence. It doesn't mean that you have to be intelligent. It means that you have to just apply yourself in a way that accords with these teachings, in which are intelligent. You think carefully about things. You don't mess around. Anyway, that's the Dhamma. And then when you think about the Dhamma in that way, there's one amazing teaching that actually leads towards this goal, gradually, stage by stage. Eventually, it might even lead to Nibbana. Maybe you don't know that, but there is that promise, right, at the back of your mind. If it goes in the right direction, eventually it might lead to something absolutely amazing. And then again, you gain the inspiration in the meaning and the Dhamma, the joy and the rapture, the tranquility, the pleasure, and eventually you gain the samadhi. And then you live in balance amid an unbalanced population, unafflicted, etc., etc. So that's the recollection of the Dhamma for you. Then we have the recollection of the Sangha. Again, Mahanama, a noble disciple, recollects the Sangha thus. The Sangha of the Blessed One's disciple is practicing the good way, practicing the straight way, practicing the true way, practicing the proper way. That is the four pairs of persons, the eight types of individuals. This is the Sangha of the Blessed One's disciples, is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential salutation, the unsurpassed field of merit for the world. So these are the Aryans, the noble ones, the ones who have seen the Dhamma for themselves. This is what refers to here. So how do we relate to this? How do we make this into a recollection that can be powerful? And one way is just to remember. Sometimes one of the things that I like to remember sometimes is when people do things that don't fit with this world. And I like to sometimes remember some of those monastics in the world who do things that seem almost impossible to do. And then the knowledge part of that is a sense that they have some kind of insight and understanding, some kind of mental quality that is beyond what is normal. So I was talking the other day about this monk in Sri Lanka who lives in this three-walled cooties, always by himself, right? You have Ajahn Brahm goes on a six-month retreat all by himself in his cootie. He doesn't see a single person for 6 months. He just stays inside his cootie, 7 square meters, and walks on his walking path. And he reads the occasional sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. That's all he does for 6 months. We have another monk that I know of, is the one who, another monk from in Sri Lanka, who all he did for 40 years was wandering around and around in Sri Lanka, never stopping in a particular place, just wandering. And then he would settle down for the 3 months of the rains retreat. Then he would start wandering again. And there's a famous story of this monk. He was walking towards a crossroad, and then one of his disciples would ask him, somebody who was there asked him, where are you going to go when you get to that crossroads over there? And he said, I will know when I get there. Right? And it's this idea that you just live in the present moment. You don't really make any decisions. And you keep on wandering. And he was spent most of the time in his jungle as well in those days. So this is just one way of remembering the Sangha, remembering that there are these people out there who just have this tremendous ability to live a life which just seems impossible to the vast majority of people. And that ability comes from some kind of inner strength and inner qualities that most of us just don't have, and we can't live like that. We're not able to live quite in that way. So this is how you can think about these noble individuals. Another way which I like to think of sometimes is just to try to imagine the mental qualities of these people. What are the mental qualities like of somebody who is an Arya, somebody who's been practicing this path, right? What do these qualities mean? And sometimes you can just think about those qualities in yourself when they become very strong and very powerful. And you know that there are beings out there who are like this pretty much all the time. And even more than the qualities you have in yourself. Sometimes you feel very generous. And there's a beautiful feeling when that is there. Sometimes you feel very kind and compassionate. What are these feelings like? Sometimes you have a great clarity of mind. You feel that you understand what the world is like. A sense of wisdom. And what you're doing there, when you remember these qualities, it's like you are also, in a sense, reflecting of the qualities of the Aryan and the noble Sangha. This is what they are like, but they are like that even more so, and even more kind of continuously and regularly and persistently than we are. This is what it is, right? Very beautiful. People, very beautiful beings in this world with these very unusual qualities. So this is the recollection of the Sangha. And we know that all of these things are true. They're practicing the good way, right? Because of these qualities they have inside of them. So that is the just some ideas about how to remember the Sangha. Sometimes we get really inspired. You know, one way of recollecting the Sangha is to read a book about somebody's life, or meeting somebody who has these qualities, and you see it and you feel, wow, this is just so powerful, and then you get some of this rapture and happiness arising because of that, and again the whole thing then takes off, right? And you. Based on that, your meditation starts to work. Okay, so let us move on to the next one. Again, Mahanama, a noble disciple, recollects his own virtuous behavior as unbroken, flawless, unblemished, unblotched, freeing, praised by the wise, ungrasped, and leading to samadhi. And again, when you recollect this noble disciple, when the noble disciple recollects his virtuous behavior, the mind is not obsessed by lust, hate, or delusion. On that occasion, his mind is simply straight, based on virtuous behavior. And then again, the whole thing happens just like before. This is about here, of course, the virtuous behavior is of a very high quality, because we're talking about the Aryas. That's why you have this idea of unbroken, flawless, etc. But sometimes, again, all you have to do is this idea we had before of this man who comes back and sits down on a chair or the bed, right, in the evening. And you just allow the mind to go towards whatever positive kind of recollection you have from the past. And it's almost automatic. You just sit back and you just allow the mind, you just guide the mind a little bit. You say, okay, you know, what is a nice memory from the past? Something I've done in the past. And then the mind kind of automatically goes to that place. And you remember something good, something positive in the past. And then something which is powerful enough, it will give rise to this sense of joy and happiness inside of you. So this is what this is. But when you do these kind of recollections, especially of your, you know, of virtue or generosity or whatever, it's important not to force the mind. You're not using a lot of power here or force. All you're doing is very gently just sitting back and allowing the mind to go to these things. And if there is something there, the mind will tend to go there, and it will tend to tap into that resource, like a spiritual resource that you have laid down over a long period of time. So these virtues, they are freeing, right? When you do these things, you get a sense of freedom, of liberation. When you do something kind and you feel the sense of happiness afterward, together with the happiness is a freeing kind of feeling here. And it's also freeing in the sense that it moves you forward on the path. It is praised by the wise, right? It's always nice to know that it's praised by the wise. It's better to be praised by the wise than to be praised by the dodgy ones. So it's nice that the wise people, the Buddha, praise the virtues and being kind, etc. And it leads to samadhi, leads to concentration. And it's ungrasped, right? These virtues, when they become very strong, you're actually not grasping very much anymore. The whole clinging to these things. A little bit of clinging initially to the idea of virtue, but you give after a while. The more virtuous you are, the less grasping there is in the mind, and the more natural this whole thing is. So just sit back and allow the memories to come by themselves. And this is even more true, or just as true, for the next one. And the next one is the recollection of generosity. Again, Mahanama, a noble disciple, recollects his own generosity thus. It is truly my good fortune and gain that in a population obsessed by the stain of miserliness, I dwell at home with a mind devoid of the stain of miserliness. Freely generous, open-handed, delighting in relinquishment, devoted to charity, delighting in giving and sharing here. And then, based on that again, your defilements are abandoned, your mind is strayed, you gain inspiration, and all the joy and happiness comes as a consequence. This is very similar to the previous one. You know, you sit back and you allow your mind to kind of, you say to your mind, what is something nice I have done in my life? Some act of generosity, some act of kindness I have done. And you allow the mind to go back, and the mind will itself find that act which is suitable for you to recall. And then you remember that, and you allow that memory to saturate you, to kind of abandon these things. The way it is explained here is this idea that instead of, you know, you're not kind of, when you say that the population obsessed by the stain of miserliness, it doesn't mean that you are critical of other people, but it's rather that you feel, wow, this is kind of the usual way of the world. People are not very generous very often. And wow, what a wonderful thing it is that I don't have that. What a great thing that is. That I am, what fortunate is for me that I have actually found an escape from that. It's the natural default condition is to be more miserly, but I've actually found an escape from that. Am I not fortunate? And now I reap the consequences. The consequences are that I am able to find the joy in these things because I have found that escape from being miserly or being stingy. And that is the right thing. That is the kind of the right way of looking at it. So be careful not to kind of fall into the fault finding. What other people do, it's just the way the world is. It's the way people are. It's neither good nor bad. It's just the way things are. There's nothing to be criticized. But the fact that somebody finds the escape from that, that is the marvelous thing, right? Wow, how wonderful that is. And then you remember these acts. And remember, it is for this reason that generosity is so important, right? When you are generous, you're actually building up this possibility of recollecting in this way in the future. That's one reason why it's so powerful. So see in your life, how can you be more generous? How can you do things in a good and a kind way? How can you be generous in a wise way? Generosity is not just about kind of giving, but it's about how you give, right? Giving at the right time, giving to where it is needed, giving with a sense of joy, giving with your own hand, all these kind of things. And then when you give in a wise way, then it will be a source and a foundation for so much happiness. Just give because it feels good. There's no other reason for giving. That's good enough. If it feels good, give. You know, this is a wonderful opportunity. And if it feels good, it will leave a very powerful impact on your mind. Because it feels good, it will leave a powerful impact on the mind. And then when you sit down in meditation, it is easy to remember, easy to recall, because the power is so strong. So when you feel the inclination, the compassion arises in you, the desire to give arises, give, don't hold back. And then this becomes a powerful and beautiful thing later on. And especially when you are on a retreat like this, it's actually good also to do things of kindness during the retreat, because this is what you remember the most powerfully, the stuff that you have done recently. Okay, so that's the power of generosity. These things are not to be taken lightly, and that's why they are here. And you can see this is where they come into their own, right? When they become a source for the happiness and ability to do the meditation practice properly. There's lots of beautiful suttas about generosity in the Pali Canon, and how to do it, how to do this in such a way that it gives really beneficial results for you. Okay, the last one. This one is also an interesting one. It's a bit more unusual. So, again, Mahanama, a noble disciple, recollects the deities, the devas, thus. There are devas ruled by the four great kings. There are Tavatinsa devas. There are Yama devas. There are Tusita devas. There are devas who delight in creation. There are devas who control what is created by others. There are the devas of Brahma's company, and there are devas still higher than these. There exist in me too such confidence as those deities possessed, because of which, when they passed away from here, they were reborn there. There exist in me too such virtue, such learning, such generosity, such wisdom, as those deities possessed, because of which, when they passed away from here, they were reborn there. When the noble disciple recollects the confidence, the virtue, the learning, the generosity, and the wisdom in himself and in those deities, on that occasion his mind is not obsessed by lust, hate, and delusion. On that occasion his mind is simply straight, uju, based on the deities. A noble disciple whose mind is straight gains inspiration in the meaning, inspiration in the Dhamma, joy connected with the Dhamma. When he is joyful, rapture arises. From one with a rapturous mind, the body becomes tranquil. When tranquil in body, feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, the mind is concentrated. This is called the noble disciple who dwells in balance amid an unbalanced population, who dwells unafflicted amid an afflicted population. As one who has entered the stream of the Dhamma, he develops recollection of the devas, the deities. So this is a bit more unusual, but the idea here is that you just understand what are these deities anyway. These deities are just beings, essentially a bit like us, right? But they have a more purified mind, essentially. So it's almost like recollecting the noble people in the world, except maybe not quite such a high level, a bit lower level. But the idea is that these deities are just like us, except that they are more pure. They have, as it says here, they have virtue, learning, generosity, and wisdom, right? And then you think, and you know that these deities are experiencing a lot of happiness because of that. And then you know that you are practicing the same way, right? You are heading towards the same happiness. You're heading towards the same kind of thing. So just by doing this, you are kind of... it's a very simple way to know that you're heading in the right direction. For some people, this might not work at all. This depends, again, very much on your inclination and what kind of background you have and all these kind of things. But for some people, this might be a beautiful way, and quite a simple way of also attaining a sense of happiness. You are doing that which leads to happiness in the future. You have all those qualities. And just by remembering that, you get even more happiness. Isn't that amazing? Just by remembering all that happiness, you get more happiness, you get inspired. And then this whole sequence takes off again as a consequence of that. Mahanama, a noble disciple who has arrived at the fruit and understood the teaching, often dwells in just this way. So that is the sutta to Mahanama, and how we can use these recollections to boost the meditation practice, to help us move towards more mindfulness and more samadhi on the path. There's one little more sutta here coming next, Nandiya, and this is just this is actually one that is given to someone who was not a Arya. So this is certainly relevant to all of us, and I thought this was quite a nice little. This is just a small snippet of this quite long sutta, but I thought this was quite nice, just to add to what has already been said just before. And again, Nandiya, you should recollect good friends. These are the Kalyanamitta, the spiritual friends. Thus, it is truly my good fortune and gain that I have good friends who take compassion on me, who desire my good, who exhort and instruct me. Thus, you should establish mindfulness internally, based on good friends. And when you do that, this is quite nicely done. When you do this sort of recollection, then just as a pot turned upside down does not receive back the water that has been poured out, and just as a fire that has gotten out of control advances, burning up a dry woodland and does not return to what is burned, so too a noble disciple, it says again now, who possesses these 11 qualities, abandons bad, unwholesome qualities, and does not take them up again. So this is the same kind of idea. So you remember your noble friends, right? Starting with the Buddha, we've just been doing that, and then everybody else in your life who kind of has a positive effect in your life, right? All the teachers, all the Kalyanamittas in the Buddhist society or Buddhist community or here who kind of have a good effect on you and are helping you to move in the right direction. Wow, isn't it amazing that we have this opportunity, this Buddhist community, which is able to, where everybody kind of works together and pulls in the right direction. It is not obvious. It doesn't have to be like that. It is rare for these conditions to be available, right? And when you remember how rare it is and how difficult it is to get these sort of things, Perth here in WA has one of the most powerful Buddhist societies probably anywhere, certainly in the world outside of Asia. But even sometimes within Asia, it can be difficult to find a Buddhist group which is so powerful and where there's so many positive things happening that support you and move you in the right direction. So you have all these Kalaramitas, you have this Buddhist society, you have all of these things there. So, wow, what a wonderful opportunity it is. And you know that part of this is that there are people who have compassion and push you forward, help you forward and teach you. And again, on that basis, you abandon your unwholesome qualities and develop the good ones. So that is the idea of developing the good signs. So we have been talking a lot during this retreat about how to abandon the defilements. And here we're seeing the flip side of that, how to abandon the happy states. And it always goes together, right? Abandoning defilements and developing the happy states go together. They are two sides of the pretty much the same coin. So that's what we are looking at. And then from this, this is where you can see here how meditation becomes possible and how the very final part of the path starts to unfold as a consequence of these kind of all of this. So that is what I'm going to look at tomorrow morning. This is the very last page here. And this very last page, I'm not going to go into this in great detail, obviously, because there's only one session left with the suttas. But this is the back to MN27, the very last piece of MN27. And then the Gotamaka Sutta after that. So that will be what we'll do next. And then we'll show how all of these things that we have done so far, how it culminates in the meditation really taking off, and how eventually it leads to full awakening. And some of these things may seem far away, they may seem like something out of reach, but that doesn't really matter. Sometimes it's inspiring, right? This is part of this is like the recollection of the Dhamma, what the Dhamma promises you, the kind of things that are available when you go way, way down the path. And this too can be, in my opinion, very inspiring when you see kind of the whole thing and how it works out. Okay, so that is enough for now, and then this afternoon there will be some more interviews if you are interested in that. Okay.